Cat Disgusted is a show about veterinary nursing. It is not a show about how to cure your sick pet. If your animal is sick, take it to the vet. Don't be a crazy person and use a podcast to cure your puking cat, dog, chinchilla, etc., etc. I think they would tell you the same thing. If they could. Which they can't. Which makes it hard. You know what's up. Take them to the vet. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Cat Disgusted, a podcast for veterinary technicians and the people and animals who love them. Each episode, we explore the best of times and the worst of times in veterinary nursing. I'm your host, Nicole Dickerson. I'm an RVT working in emergency and critical care.
BTSCCC.
And this is what happens. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Cat Disgusted. This episode is different. Why is it different? Because I've got some partners in crime in this episode. It's been a while since I've had another set of voices on here. I was contacted by a great podcast called Veterinary Innovation Podcast. They are a duo of dudes who do a podcast about technology and integrating technology into veterinary medicine, because there's a podcast for everything these days. I was contacted by these guys because they have a larger team than my team of one, who helps them put together this podcast. And they found me and they liked the sound of my voice and they liked what we talk about here on the Old Cat Disgusted. And so wanted to do a little talking on the mics at the same time type of situation. So we decided to try that and it went really well. It was a really nice conversation to have about technology and veterinary medicine, which is something that, like, me being a bit of a Luddite in that regard, I never thought that I would really like want to talk about, but they made it really engaging. And so these two dudes who run this podcast, it's Sean Wilkie, who's the fellow that you'll hear me talking to. He is a serial entrepreneur, which I very much enjoy. And he has used his powers for good in veterinary medicine and is now actually the CEO of a company called Talkatu, which is a voice recognition software that helps veterinarians type their records faster by voice recognition. And he's really interested in artificial intelligence, or AI, as you'll hear us refer to it a whole lot as. His partner in crime in his podcast is Dr. Ivan Zach. Dr. Ivan Zach is the inventor of SmartFlow, which those of you technicians listening will recognize as the interface that we use for treatments in hospitals so much. Those are the iPads that the veterinary technicians I worked with carried around. Although, and you'll hear me talk about how resistant I was to this new technology when it first came into my hospital, but it's kind of a brilliant device. And he's, of course, made a whole career of it. And he won't be on the podcast today. He's in the Ukraine. And Sean, who you'll hear me talking to, he's out of Nova Scotia, Canada, who is handling this pandemic much better than California, apparently. Who knew? Canada's all quiet and good up there, and they know what they're doing. So without further ado, I think we'll listen to me and Sean have this conversation about veterinary technology and what's exciting about it and what's coming up in it and how it relates to me and my world and your world and everybody's world. I am going to give a minor plug to this website called Squadcast. Squadcast is how we did this episode, and it's pretty awesome. It's this website that you go onto and your homie, who can be anywhere in the world, can also go onto. And then it's a little bit like Zoom, where you can talk to each other with a webcam even, so you can see each other's faces. And then it records the files for you so you can have them on your computer and edit them for a podcast. So, you know, Sean's in Canada, I'm in the Bay Area, and here's this awesome thing that we created. Me and Sean are talking about the Squadcast program at the very beginning of this episode. So that's why you hear me so stunned and the technology guy not stunned as to how great it is. And then we'll, you know, talk about the pandemic too, because that's what you do these days, right? It's 2020. You talk about COVID-19. So we do that too, a little bit, but just a little, just a little. Well, you'll see. Here we go. Look at that. Recording. Okay, perfect.
It's amazing, isn't it?
I know. Well, I do have to say, like, it makes perfect sense that in the technology episode that you're introducing me to this, like, brand new
we should talk about wonder. That. Let's do that. That'll be fun. Just for a second, you know, I think it would be interesting. Because, yeah, it's so neat. Like, and, you know, I think the thing that we could do just quickly, like, just encourage people to podcast. Like, the more podcasting in the vet space, the better. There's a bunch, but, you know, if there was 100 more, that would be 100 more resources for people to get a hold of.
It's true. I mean, you know, I just got this. Oh, this is so funny. This has happened since I talked to you. So I just got this message from this person who I've never, ever met. And she's in LA or something like that. Okay. And it was a long Facebook message. And I'm always suspicious of Facebook messages because you get those weird ones that say, like, click on this. It might be you in this video. And it's a total spam thing. But this was a long paragraph. This person, she works at a Home Depot. She works the graveyard shift. And so she listens to all these podcasts. And she randomly came upon mine. And she's a big cat fan. And so she was like, I love listening to the, like, that's how she found it. She was just Googling cat podcast. And because it's the first word, it must have come up. And she was saying how she listened to, like, all 40 of them in, like, just a couple nights. And she's so bummed that there's not more of them. Like, it was the most amazing thing. This total stranger in LA who's, like, listening to my voice on a graveyard shift in a Home Depot.
I was at NAVC this last year, and
ooh, you have to tell me what's the NAVC? I don't even.
Oh, so it's the North American Veterinary Medical Conference. It's the biggest veterinary conference in the world.
Oh my
god! It happens in Florida.
Yeah.
And
oh
it's
yeah.
Wild.
I mean, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
VMX. It's called VMX.
That's familiar. VMX. Yeah, I know. Right. Yeah, 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 yeah. VMX.
Yeah. So I was there with Talkatoo, and this guy came up, and he looked super important. You know, like, I'm a pretty casual guy. I'm in a dirty shirt on a Saturday watching the kids. I'm sitting around at this trade show, and this guy comes up, and he said, are you Sean Wilkin? I said, yeah. And he said, he's like, I got to tell you, I listened to your guys' podcast at the gym, and I absolutely love it. Turns out he's the CEO of MVA, like the huge animal chain hospital.
Yes.
Like, listen to every episode in the gym.
I love that.
It's super weird.
Well, I mean,
pretty cool.
This is how the world is working right now. Is like, you know, like, people have a lot of time just doing, like, yard work or whatever, and you just need something that's playing in the background.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, it's good to know where background noise, right?
I know. But, you know, I feel like I have zero problems with that. Like, I'm like, you know, if you want to listen in, that's cool. But if you want to also just have a chatter.
Interesting, yeah, I'm happy to have them have
I'm good have with
me.
It, right? And my whole aim too, you know, I feel like there's a lot of veterinary medicine podcasts like that are very specific to vet med people. Like, you know, like, there's, like, doctor ones, there's, like, you know, specific ER ones or internal medicine ones. But I kind of, my goal was kind of, you know, I'd specialize so specifically, but I feel like no one really knows what vet techs do, like, and that what they experience on a daily basis.
That's
so,
right.
So my aim was to be like, you know, it's interesting if you are in the industry, then you're going to totally get what I'm talking about. But if you're not, here's a little bit of a window of what our everyday is. And, like, God help us.
Yeah, exactly.
To get
That's
through
right.
another day
I
of
know.
It.
It's wild.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I do think that listening to the technology bits of it, you know, it feels very, when you're working in the hospital, technology can be a source of like, unbelievable frustration.
Infinite frustration. Yeah.
Yes. So I figure you've been doing, have you always done tech? You've always been a tech person?
Yeah. Since I've been, like, 13, you know, the way I got into tech is I actually had a very rare hip disorder where the ball joint of my hip separated from my hip.
No way.
And yes, because it's called a slipped epiphysis. I can't believe I remember the name.
Whoa.
But it happened on both sides. And I was, like, 13 years old, and my grandparents bought me a Commodore 64 and took it in, and I played with that, and then I had another one, and you know, I was in a wheelchair in and out of the hospital for like a couple of years, and I was probably around like 12, 13.
Whoa.
And so kind of really dug deep into technology, and it almost seemed like something that was innate inside me. You know, I just, you know, I was constantly doing stupid stuff, you know, connecting to the university and taking little bits of the internet when the internet was, you know, just text screens, just white text on a black screen, and reading things, you know, and being on BBSs, the kind of the precursor to the internet. And so I just had so much time, and I guess because I was doing so much of this, you know, just kind of fumbling around with technology and learning about it, it kind of just was always present in my life.
Wow.
You know, from a really early age till now. And so I was definitely one of those young people that knew way more about computers when nobody else knew about them. And so I think that that was kind of my entry point into technology, is just as a young kid kind of being immersed in it.
And into medicine, because all of a sudden you had to deal with this whole medical world while you were 12, 13. That's like the most formative. Like, I'm trying to think of what I was doing when I was 12 and 14, like, or 12 and 13, you know, like probably playing with like briar horses in middle school or something, and here you are in a wheelchair.
Really, I mean, yeah, it's totally true. And I mean, I guess to some degree, like, you know, I never thought of it actually until just now when you're saying it, which is pretty interesting. But I was definitely in around the healthcare industry. I was in and out of a hospital.
Yeah.
Probably at least 10 times.
Oh my,
you know,
God.
For 2 weeks or a week, or I think maybe 3 or 4 weeks even at the most.
Uh-huh.
At one point after recovering after the surgery. So in and out of the hospital a lot at a young age.
And both hips. You had to have surgery on,
yeah,
both hips.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, so they both ended up having to be done. And then I think one side they ended up having to go in and do another time.
Oof.
So it was just really, it was a really kind of ridiculous experience for a young kid. But I guess it treated me okay.
I was going to say, but
to have this fascination.
It forged your path into what you were going to do.
Yeah, I kind of went into entrepreneurship.
Uh-huh.
That was kind of my path.
Mm-hmm,
I went
mm-hmm.
from, you know, just being a geek in my parents' house to fixing things for other people. And then I had an opportunity to kind of do like a little bit of kind of teaching at a
mm-hmm.
school, of all things, like teaching adults how to use the internet.
Oh, see, now that's one that is 2020 right there too, because I feel like my nephews they do all kinds of things on the phones that I have no idea.
Yeah, and the best thing for me is at the time I was getting paid, I think like $30 an hour. It was, you know, a couple of hours a week, but it was amazing as
what?
A kid to find this job teaching adults and getting paid for it, teaching them something I loved. So that kind of continued. I just kind of jumped into technology. I understood it, but not only did I understand it, but I was able to teach it to other people. And I think that is probably one of my unique abilities, is to be able to take people that don't understand technology and make it relatable to something that they know. And so it's kind of natural for me to be doing a podcast about technology, because I love teaching people. And it really is fun to take something that's super complicated, like artificial intelligence, when people think the robots are just going to come and get us, and take it down and rip it into bite-sized pieces and tell people why it's not scary and why it's pretty awesome. So, you know, I got into running one small business. I started a computer store when I was 21 years old. I
wow.
had a computer store.
So selling the products, like selling.
Yeah, selling computers. Yeah. And then selling to students. It was called Student Computers, .ca. So we're an online company to sell computers to students. And at the time, it was like early 2000s. And you could buy a used computer for, you know, an eighth of what you would spend on a new computer, and they'd still be good.
Oh, yeah.
And in a lot of cases, a lot better.
Yeah.
So we sold literally hundreds of thousands of computers to students.
Man.
And then we had another location, and then that company morphed into kind of helping people with their businesses,
uh-huh.
their IT and their businesses.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And then we got into the internet services provider business.
Uh-huh.
So we were actually selling internet and providing internet infrastructure for large companies.
Right.
And then I got into real estate. And then I started a company with Google. And then I left life. I escaped life for a couple of months and moved to Southeast Asia. And
whoa.
It was about 6 months. I just kind of downcycled after I sold my company. And then I got super bored, read all the books that I wanted to read, and found myself back in a company that I had started almost 20 years ago that was still running. And I kind of went in, took control of that company and then grew it again.
Wow. And
at the time that I did that, we were actually selling voice recognition to medical doctors.
Oh, okay.
And so, mm-hmm. you know, it was really interesting and it was a pretty cool thing to do, sell mm-hmm. technology to medical doctors. And at one point, this idea came, what if we could do this with vets? And then I flew to Texas, of all places, met this radiologist that had been using the product, and then we converted the product into a product for veterinary medical and built a piece of software. And I ran that company for 3 years and then sold it.
Uh-huh.
And then I started another company just after the podcast, actually,
wow.
Because I loved vet med, you know, and we had this product and I got into the veterinary medicine industry and the people are amazing.
Yeah.
Are the nicest people you
ever meet. I was
wondering
what, yeah, that was the draw. The draw was the veterinarians yeah. that you met and you wanted to help them.
So I met this one guy. We thought that there was a missing piece of voice recognition for vets and it uh-huh. didn't exist before we started to do what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And we really brought it to the world. And then I sold the company. It was called Dragon Veterinary. I sold that company because I wanted to do something a little bit more sophisticated, or I really wanted to just take another break.
Mm.
So I sold the company, and then I had this idea that I could do a better job. So we then built Talkatu from the ground up, and that's been a year and a half adventure. So,
that's the voice recognition
yeah,
software.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm do every day. And it's really nice. Like a year and a half ago, I was running three companies. And now I'm running one. And
right.
so I'm super focused. I've got a team of like 13 of the most amazing, smartest people I've ever worked with in my entire life that make me feel inadequate half of the week, you know, when I go in and they're just three steps ahead of me.
And are they veterinary based? Like, are there other people
no,
that are?
No,
wow.
So like our team is like a bunch of young, energetic scientists, data scientists, engineers, you know, marketing people, like people that have skills that I didn't even know were possible to have. So like, you know, like we've got our newest or no, not even our newest anymore, because we've hired a couple people since him. But one of our newest people that joined us on the digital marketing side, he's a mechanical engineer
uh-huh.
turned marketer. So, you know, he's an engineer, but he does marketing because marketing has turned into a science.
I was just going like, to say it's all math and logarithms now,
it
like
sure
how
is.
You with like where you're going to advertise to, like, because, you know, your Facebook yeah. feed, that's exactly what that is. That's a marketing
it totally is.
Ploy.
Yeah.
And that's all an algorithm that they do
and it's
every
so
day.
So complex.
Mm-hmm.
And you've marketing is run or turned into running experiments.
Right.
Seeing results, adjusting, refining, running
yes.
experiments, adjusting, refining.
Yeah.
So it's turned into a science. You
yeah.
know, before it used to be put it on TV, right? When we were young, it was like turn on the TV.
Right. Yeah.
And be fed
that was
advertising
it.
The entire evening.
That's
and
right.
And then you want new sneakers and maybe a trip to McDonald's.
Yep.
And you know, and now it's super complex because we all have different interests. We've all evolved and changed and everything's get complicated. And the world has so many more options now than we had before. And so you have these groups of people that can be marketed to and targeted to, veterinarians being one of them.
Right.
It's amazing. But, you know, I was talking to a good friend the other day, and he was like, I love targeted ads. And I was like, what?
I know. You're like, what?
I love targeted ads. He's like, I'm going to buy stuff. And I'd rather be showing ads for things that I might like to buy than things that I wouldn't like to buy. And this guy's a smart guy. He's an architect and an engineer. And I was like, you know what? I kind of agree with you. You know, if I want to go camping, which I kind of want to do now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, after being cooped up in the house for way too long.
Yes.
You know, it's okay to see a place that's, you know, provides a nice place to camp, but it's not the end of the world.
Oh, that is very true. I mean, like there's a lunch bag that I have, which is this like, it's a white lunch bag with red writing on it in boldface, and it says human organ. And it's like, so it looks like if you weren't thinking about it too much, if you saw me on the BART train in scrubs with my human organ, like cold lunch bag, that it might give you pause. give me a seat, maybe. You know, with that particular lunch bag, you know, if you get on the BART and then accidentally drop it and kick it across the aisle, sorry, 5 second rule. Sorry, my bad. I got it. But you know, they like that bag came from an ad that was on Facebook that showed up in my feed. And like, you know, do you think you want to buy this? Is this what you want? And I'm like, you know what? That is absolutely what I want, Facebook. Thank you for that. Now, Nova Scotia is also closed down, right? Like, you guys don't have a whole lot open there.
So,
is that true?
Life has changed in Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
So, in Nova Scotia, Canada, where I'm at, I just left my grandparents, mm-hmm. who I have not seen in 3 months.
Right.
I spent the afternoon with them, mm-hmm. and we are virtually back to normal.
Wow.
With no new cases for, I think, 3.5 weeks.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah,
okay,
it's
that
very
is
nice.
That is not what's happening in the Bay Area. That is not the case. And it's hard to say why. I mean, I think some of it is more testing, but it's also that people are getting tired of this, and I think that people are starting to be a little bit more lax in what they're in the mask wearing and all that. So I think there's someone once referred to it as like shelter fatigue. That's what they called it. Like, people are just done. They're done with it. They want to go back to their normal lives. And so it's hard to say if it's just that people are just being less careful or if it is more testing, but whatever it is, we are not as lucky as you are, as Nova Scotia.
Yeah, you know,
3.5 weeks is a long time.
Incredible. Yeah, it's incredible here. So, you know, there's Atlantic Canada, which is the area that I live in.
Yes.
Nova Scotia is one of the provinces.
Uh-huh,
there's also PEI, New Brunswick, and Newfoundland.
Uh-huh.
So there's kind of, it's like four states, the equivalent of four states in the U.S. And we now have what's called the Atlantic Canadian bubble. And you're able to travel around freely to these other places. And not only are you able to travel freely, we're able to have gatherings of up to 200 people.
What?
So it's really quite, I mean, it's really gone back to normal.
That's
restaurants,
nuts.
Bars, everything's open. And it's incredible. And it's been like that, and there's been no new cases.
Right,
so
it's been okay.
It's pretty magical.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, because if you did it for 3.5 weeks, right, that's beyond their two-week, well, whatever they think,
yes.
whatever they think that incubation period may or may not be.
Yeah.
Yeah, then you're kind of in the safe zone there. Oh, that's good. So does that mean that you're, well, you probably did most of your work. Did you do it from home anyway? Like, were you all?
Yeah, you know, so we have an office. Uh-huh. We have an office in an incredible technology incubator in Halifax.
Okay.
And, you know, there's about 200 companies in there, maybe 150 or something like that. There's quite a few companies.
Is it kind of like a WeWork building where they're
it
all
is,
in their
but
own?
It's a government-sponsored one to kind of generate, like, tech companies in our province. It's really, really quite awesome.
Hail
so
Canada
the,
for that. That sounds good.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you guys got all kinds of awesome places down in the Bay Area. I've spent lots of time in them.
Oh, I bet.
Over the years with various companies.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's amazing because, you know, there's all these tech companies in there. And so we have, you know, our team of 13, which not everybody's close by. We have somebody that's on the other side on the West Coast and a few people here and there. We've got one person in Newfoundland and one person in Vancouver that work on our team. Now there is four people. And we could all be there if we wanted to,
right.
but we've adapted and adjusted, and we were okay with remote work before the pandemic,
right.
which I'm super glad I was, because I was the old guy, you know, I turned 40 last week.
Isn't that weird?
And I was like, you gotta go to work, like, you know, there's a place that you gotta go to work. And I always kind of didn't agree with this kind of idea of remote work. I was not trusting. I was paranoid. I was, you know, all of the things that you shouldn't be. That was me.
Right.
But, you know, we have a really young team, and they really pushed us to kind of think differently. And they're like, you know, if I want to work at the library, like, why is that a problem? It's just up the street. They have better coffee. And I was like, you know what? Go for it. So we kind of let everybody work one day a week remotely if they wanted to. And then when we had to work remotely, we just like moved out of the office 2 or 3 days before everybody else in the world did, because we were like, you know, it seems like it's going to get bad. And so we all moved out, and we've been remote ever since. And then we've made a decision as a management team, like, if you want to be remote, we don't care. You know, so we're not forcing people back to the office if they're uncomfortable, because what we've actually found, and I'm sure anybody that's in a business or anybody that's been remote working that listens to your show is probably said, you know what, they probably work harder at home because it's so easy to work. You roll out of bed. You don't have to put on any clothes, you know, if you don't want to. You don't have to shower.
2020 is the year of no pants. That's
it's so awesome. I did miss the social aspect. You know, I'm a really like extroverted guy. I want to be meeting people, hanging out with people, and I missed it a lot.
That's the part that I find is so hard. I mean, like for me too, because I feel like I definitely feed off of interacting with people, and so that being reduced, that's a bit of a thing. But you know what you said that I thought is so funny about our lives is that being the 40-year-old makes you the old guy in the office. That is veterinary technology. Like, so I'm 42 and I was the old lady because everybody else who is in all the vet techs, they're all like 25, 23. So that means that they are the ones who are so much more. I actually think that they have a much better embracing of like the texting culture and like the iPad culture of everything, and not just in the hospital, but just generally. So like, you know, when we started to get new things in the hospital, like SmartFlow, like your homie's program, those 25-year-old kids were all, oh yeah, we got this. I put my iPad like under pieces of paper. I was hiding it. I was like, I can't with this. This is hard for me, this whole tech thing. And it's just because there was, not that it wasn't working, because it was, and they were able to use it. It was that I was so distrustful of it actually doing what I wanted it to do. And that's what made me think of my own experience with that, made me think to ask you about that. Like, how do you get like the veterinarians who are like, say like the one doctor practice, like the ones who maybe actually need to have some technology put into their office, how do you get them to trust the tech? Like, trust that it's going to do what you need it to do.
Yeah, that's a fantastic question.
Because I was that person.
Yeah, and you know, the reason it's a fantastic question is because I learned it early on. You know, one of my companies, it was called Sheepdog. Our tagline was that we were information's best friend. So
that's cute.
Yet another tie into the veterinary space or the the pet space. So Sheepdog was information's best friend, and we deployed email systems for thousands of people, companies that had tens of thousands of employees. And we would move them over to Gmail, so Google's enterprise tool. And I figured out early on that no one wants to change. Everybody loves to do what we've always done because it's comfortable and we become expert at it.
So true.
And so what you need to do in order to bring people along this road of technology change, it's really simple. You just need to show them what's in it for them. You need to make it matter for them. And if they can see it, and it's not complicated, and they can be like, I can get this value out of that. Okay, I'll give it a try. And that's the magic. The magic is showing people what's in it for them and making it easy enough to digest that they're interested.
Like, it's going to be like, by using this program, it's actually going to be advantageous to you. Like, you know, like I'm bringing you this tool that is made, like it's tailored to be useful for you and your day. Specifically, like this, like I'm here to make your life an easier thing.
Yeah, just give me 2 minutes. I mean, and you know, the vet space is one of the hardest spaces to sell new technology
into. I totally believe that.
And the reason why is because everybody's busy. They've got 20 things to do, and they know they're going to be there late almost all the time. So, you know, if you can get 2 minutes and get their attention, which is sometimes hard to do. But if you can get those 2 minutes and show them what's in it for them, and, you know, shameless self-promotion, but my startup Talkatoo, what we do is we do the typing for people. So,
that's a big one. Yeah.
It's so annoying to type, you know, it's just like labor intensive and annoying. And if people aren't decent at it, and even if you are decent at it, it's still kind of annoying. Mm. And computers have literally evolved so far down that path that they can get 90% of it right. So imagine, and I know that you can relate to this, Nicole, imagine that doctor that you've worked with in the past that doesn't do any notes, or maybe they make a little note here or there and then they forget to save it.
Yeah.
Imagine if you could take out 90% of what they wanted to say about that client encounter there was maybe still some mistakes in the medical record, but imagine if you could get 90% of what happened a year and a half ago to Fluffy, and Fluffy's owner's back, and there's no medical record, and they were there a year ago, mm-hmm. or a year and a half ago, and maybe they were there two or three times, and there's nothing. You've got no history.
Imagine
if you could have 90% of what they would have said at that time, or 95% correct. And so voice recognition technology is literally a game changer. Mm-hmm. They can take 2 minutes after that encounter, complete the medical record, move on. And so when we show people what's in it for them with Talkatoo, we literally blow their mind.
Well, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. I mean, saving the burnout factor is so real. And especially, I mean, I think in all veterinary disciplines, but especially in emergency, because if you have a busy day in your 12-hour shift, you're going to be there for 18 hours writing records. Like, that's just the reality of the doc situation. So if you've got voice dictation stuff, in fact, there was a an internal medicine doctor that I work with who did have like a voice like a dictation little headset thing, and people thought she was a loon, like at her desk with this little Britney Spears mic doing her records at the end of the day. But you know what? She left by like 6 o'clock.
Yeah,
and everybody was like, "Oh,
we get them out of there a couple of hours early, get them some more time with their family,
yeah.
and help them with this crazy job that they found themselves in that requires them to work a full day." And then another couple of hours, or run a business, or deal with like human resource challenges. Like, we know how stressful mm-hmm. it can be to be a veterinarian or a vet tech. It can be pretty shitty, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that that's why the burnout's such an issue in this industry, is because it's hard. It's hard work, you know. And layer on top of it, you know, some irate client that doesn't want to pay their bill after you just save their animal's life. Like, it's so ridiculous what they have to deal with. I hate it.
Oh yeah, I know. And this, and you've touched, I mean, you very intuitively have sensed like where the stress factors are in this job. I mean, it's that you're there long hours, you're underappreciated and underpaid. Like, that's and so that's, so all you have in the rest of your world is your time. And so if you're not allowed to do the things like take your vacation, go home at the end of the day, like, though, I think those are the factors that cause the burnout, because you can't have balance that way. And that's what's happening now, is that these emergency rooms that are still open in this pandemic, because a lot of the GPs have stopped seeing non-essential appointments, they're or closed down entirely. The emergency clinics in the Bay Area all have 8 to 10 hour waits every night. And everyone is completely exhausted, and they can't, they don't feel like they get a chance to relax because the volume is so high. And nurses, by default, they want to care, and they want to care for the things that are not doing well. And the system doesn't support any kind of mental or physical health about that, because they know that the nurses will stay. They will stay because they want to make sure that everything is okay. And I feel like it's a bit of a disservice to them that there's no structure to save them from that.
Yeah, it's really quite crazy. And, you know, the work that we've done, really, I really love it. You know, I love the podcast because it allows me to shine a little flashlight on some cool things that can save people time.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it. I like the conversations. They're nerdy conversations, and I'm a nerd, so I like them. But then our company, you know, our vision of just saving people's time, which can keep them away from that stuff. So, you know, I've never done this before. I've been on a couple of podcasts, but anybody that's listening to this that wants our software, call me. And I'll give it to you for a couple of months, no charge, totally free. And if you can put it in the hands of somebody that needs it, you just know they're breaking, you know, they just have too many things on their mind, just reach out to us. My email is sean@talkatoo.com, or call us and say that you heard it on this podcast, and we'll get you set up with a couple of months of our software.
Oh, look at that. You did it now. You did it now. Now your email inbox going, blow it up. People are like, oh my God, I get to go home early. Oh, please. Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
for
the
love of
God. It's just magical. Like, we did this case study with one of our customers, and, you know, we paid some independent interviewer to come in and interview her, and she was like, I save 50% of the time that I spend on my medical records. And that
Good.
Blew my mind. Like, that was 3 hours a day. She's got down to an hour and a half.
It's great. I mean, that's great. That's great.
It's magic. And it's time that she's not getting, she wasn't getting paid for that time.
Right.
Her hourly wage was just going down as she was there overtime.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, and this is the other thing that'll get you, too, is if you're there, sitting in front of that computer writing your records, I feel like there's this one doctor who was new, and she stayed at the hospital this one time for 24 hours to get the records done. And I was like, you don't even know what you're doing. At like hour 18, you're not writing medical records that are going to be of any use to anybody. Like, do you even remember what you did at that point? You know, so I feel like that's the other thing too, is that the quality is going to go up if your brain is still working.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're able to get the things done in a way that's not going to make you go back and correct them, because you know you're going to double the workload for yourself the more tired that you get and the less you're able to remember.
Yeah, and then you just walk out of there like a zombie.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And most likely they have another shift that's going to happen in like an hour from when they go home. So that's the other thing that's not going to serve them, right? But you know, I read this article in The Lancet, and it was about human medicine. And this was a rare moment, but this is not modern times, not in the Trump era, but there was a Chinese company and an American company that had worked together to form this diagnostic computer. And it was classified as like an AI device. And you would input patient data, and then it would give you a diagnosis based on the information that you gave it. And they tested it with some kind of fictitious cases, like they weren't actual patient data, but apparently it ended up being right like 99% of the time. And the human medicine world got real freaked out by that. And they're like, oh no, we couldn't possibly trust a computer with diagnoses, because it's such an, I mean, since Pliny the Elder, humans have been diagnosing conditions, and the idea that this computer would take that over, in they think, was intimidating to a lot of human doctors, that all of a sudden they're going to be out of a job. So now, do you ever get that from people, that they're worried the AI is going to replace humans in some way, like in an industry that's already underpaid people? Like, is AI ever a bit of a, like a, do people see it as a danger that it's going to take over other people's jobs?
I think, yeah. I mean, the reality is some people definitely think that. Mm-hmm. And it's normally people that are not aware, not educated, and don't really understand. I think if you cross that line of education and awareness, you understand that, you know, they can provide an incredible amount of value, but they can only ever do what they're told, or
right,
they can only ever do what their data set has provided instructions to do. So, you know, we will get to the point where technology will change industries, you know, and I think that veterinary medicine is no stranger to technology change in the last couple of years. Technology has kind of found the vet field, and it's saying, what problems do you have that we might be able to help solve? And so I think
medicine world said, like, oh, sit, have a seat.
Yeah, exactly. How much time do you have? AI, how much time do you have? And so, yeah, so I think that there's some really interesting things happening in vet med that kind of take us down that path. And I think Signal Pet, the company, the management team, and the technology are all amazing. And what they're doing is assisted, you know, radiograph diagnostic. What Signal Pet does is allow an independent one doctor practice, mm-hmm, the ability to upload a radiograph, mm-hmm, and have it have basic diagnostic done by AI, and then have supplementary diagnostics done by a team of teleradiologists.
And it's like a two-step process.
It can be two-step, or it can be just the, like, if you think you already know what's going on, you can run it through the AI and it's going to give you some information that you didn't have before.
Wow.
Or if you're not sure and it's a very complicated case, their system's so sophisticated, we'll send it to a couple of radiologists simultaneously. And yeah, what they're doing is absolutely incredible. And radiology has been long kind of touted as an industry that will have an AI assisted kind of infrastructure really quickly. It's been happening in human medicine, not so much in the US or Canada, but in countries like Italy and Brazil, it's been happening for years. And Tokyo as well. A lot in Japan. You know, they've got this massive volumes of cases, and the AI is able to kind of do triage. You know, imagine if we had an AI robot or 1,000 of them that could do triage for COVID-19. Like, you know, would that be a bad thing in San Francisco where you have, you know, 10-hour emergency wait times? I don't think so. I mean, I would talk to an AI before I'd rather wait 10 hours.
That's right. You know? Well, see, and that's the thing is that I feel like the Lancet article too, that was where the tech people who had created this machine had said that it was going to be valuable. They're like, it's not going to replace the minds of doctors. That's not the idea. But if you have this tool in a rural area where you're like hundreds of miles away from where there's any kind of specialist, or if you're somewhere where the volume is super, super high, like COVID-19 times veterinary ER, where you've got all this activity that's happening that's funneled towards emergency, and that's what it would be for. It'd be for triage purposes.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, if we're smart, we'll find areas to embrace it and realize, although we may not control every element of it, that's the whole definition of AI, is it's a machine that can learn from itself. We can always pull the plug, you know, and I think that, you know, reality has to set in for the people that are scared of these things. You know, ultimately we'll have the on and off switch. So yeah, so I think AI is interesting. I don't think it's scary. I think it's fascinating. And I think the easiest way to think about it is just, you know, a lot of data that can be queried at the same time. It'd be like having a house full of books, and instead of having to read them, the information would be at your fingertips.
The radiograph thing, I thought that was really, that was the one that I thought was really interesting, because, you know, in emergency, that, you know, ER doctors are not necessarily trained extensively to look at radiographs and make a diagnosis. I mean, we can, like, emergency, you look for like a couple basic things. Like, you're looking for, like, is there a rock in the stomach? Is there a huge balloon of gas in the stomach? You know, like a GDV, which is a, like, one true surgical emergency. I'm sure you've heard that before in your veterinary world by now. I mean, like, that's one that's easy to diagnose if you take an x-ray. Now, a GI foreign body, like if a dog ate like a piece of towel that's placating their intestines, that can be trickier. And that can get by you. And so every ER doctor lives in this kind of low-grade anxiety world of missing something on those radiographs. And if there was a way to, there are ways to verify what they are, but, you know, being emergency, inevitably you're going to have that questionable radiograph is going to happen on a Sunday at, say, 3 a.m.
Where that's right. When the least convenient time.
That's right. That's right. That's when you're going to have this thing that maybe is a problem, maybe it's not. And so to have a resource that would be able to get back to you immediately and confirm your suspicions, even if you don't, and it doesn't have to be like a big time one. Like, I feel like in that, the circumstance I'm thinking of is that specific one where you've got like the dog that's eaten something it shouldn't. You probably want to keep it in the hospital, but you're just not sure. You don't necessarily have to go do surgery right away, but you just want to know whether or not you should keep it there for surgery in the morning. And that's where that's going to be important, because if you send that dog home and then it perforates its bowel overnight, that's the emergency doctor nightmare, right? So if they have a way to not even necessarily, you know, call that, wake the surgeon up, because that's not what they want, but just to confirm your suspicion.
Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant, isn't it? You know, to be able to take this thing and use a piece of technology to give you a sense of comfort. It's bizarre.
Yes, that's right.
You know, it's bizarre. It's like a technology blanket, you know? But you know, if we can use these tools to enable us to have that sense of comfort, that's exactly what they're there for. And I think it's a brilliant thing.
Well, you know what I mean, you've probably experienced a little bit of this. There are some driverless cars that are making their way on the roads now. Like, I actually saw one the other day in San Francisco, and it's got big old signs all over it that say, you know, that it warns you that it's a driverless car. And they've closed off a bunch of streets in San Francisco because of the pandemic. They've got these like kind of walk and slow streets, and it was on one of those, which I thought was kind of weird, because I was like, oh, okay, driverless car taking advantage of the slow street. But everybody had kind of gathered around to watch it go back and forth, because it's impressive. it's an impressive thing. Like, everyone wants to see the newfangled thing work, you know? So there's curiosity in there. I feel like that's maybe your saving grace too, is that people, they're curious about it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we're curious and distrusting until it improves our life. And then we go all the way in, you know, once the benefit has been derived and the trust has been established, you know, we go all the way in. But, you know, I always find it interesting, you know, like people talk about self-driving cars and the technology that's in self-driving cars, like Doppler and like all of this technology, you know, it's been there forever.
That's right.
We've been using it in ships and planes forever. So the whole self-driving car thing really ties into one of our interviewees on our podcast. Scott has this technology that measures body temperature, heart rate, all of these different vitals wirelessly.
Oh,
so the animal
right.
is in the cage. You know, maybe it's a tiger. Let's just for example, we don't want to open the cage and take the tiger's temperature. That's no fun. That's not a good day. So they have this technology, and I think they actually used it. There was an example on the podcast where they used the technology. I think it was at the San Diego Zoo and four big cats.
Mm-hmm.
And what a way to make the day better. You know, you don't have to sedate the cat. You don't have to go into the cage. Like, it's pretty good.
I heard that one. That was amazing. So the one thing I couldn't, maybe you could help me visualize this a little bit though. So how does it, like, I get that it can do, I think the temperature was the one thing that he said was the trickiest thing. Like that they're still working on how to get the temperature right, but that they could monitor like the respiratory rate and the heart rate. So is there a device attached to the animal in some way? There's not,
the magic.
Right?
So that's
how did they get it?
The easiest way to think of it, I would say, is think of like how sonar has mapped the bottom of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So we send waves of energy, sound waves, down to the bottom, and then we listen to them on the way back.
Right.
And then we put an algorithm in place, and we do some math, and we make it draw a picture. The math draws a picture, and that's how we get there. It's not dissimilar.
Wow.
You know, it's sending energy
right
towards the animal. It's hitting the animal, and it's able to do some mathematical calculations and produce the results that we would normally get in a much more manual way.
That is such an amazing thing. See, and now when I was thinking about that technology and like how would I use that in my, like, how would I use that in my world? And you brought up a good point, like, you know, like that, like something that you didn't want to touch, right? So if it's a wild animal, that's going to make sense. Now I was thinking about it in like a CCU setting in a specialty hospital. I'm like, I mean, I feel like it's going to be maybe helpful for a fractious cat that's otherwise stable, but like, we're a little bit too invasive for that in specialty medicine, I think.
Well, here's another example, Nicole. Like, imagine, you know, you've got the cat, everything's gone well in the surgery, and you want to go home. Like, got an iPhone app, and they can set alerts on the iPhone app if you need to go back.
Well, that's, now there's danger to that, though, right? You'd still kind of want a human present with a post-op patient, but you know what you don't have all the time?
What about for the vet that lives around the corner from the hospital? Like, literally 2 minutes away.
Well, and there's a lot of hospitals that, like in New York City, my friend works at one, where the nurse will be there overnight, but the doctor's not there overnight. And
that's
the time where if you wanted to alert you have to wake them up, and that's always a thing. And they want to know what's going on. You want to make sure that it's worth waking them up to bother them to come in. But that's the circumstance where they could, with the iPhone app, they could look at what you're looking at.
Yeah.
So then there's no question about, well, what you said was this. Well, but I said that, but I said this thing, but you said, you know, like then it gets back and forth between at 1 a.m. when everyone's tired anyway. So that's where I could see it could be advantageous for that. It's a way to look at what's happening in the hospital in real time and help the poor soul who's stuck there make it, you know, you can make the decision together based on what you guys are seeing. So now I'm in lab animal medicine, which is a very different beast, both figuratively and realistically, like pun fully intended. because the animals that I'm dealing with, I'm on what they call the large animal side, and so anything that's bigger than a mouse or a rat. So it mean, but they're, because they're large animals, they are not companion animals. Like they sometimes they could be, but rarely. It's a much more rare circumstance where companion animals are used for lab medicine these days. And so we're talking about like pigs for cardiac studies. They will use rhesus macaques in place of human beings. Say, for instance, the coronavirus vaccine. They were in the news the other day, right, that these macaques had received this coronavirus vaccine. But those are all creatures that don't want you touching them. You know, I mean, maybe the pigs, maybe, but you also have, you know, with monkeys, they can carry something called herpes virus B, and to them, it does not harm them. But to humans, if you were to contract that, you'll die. Like there, it's, there are no, you do not have a defense for that. And so that's the circumstance where I could see you would be able to, because you can't just go in there and take their heart rate. That's not a thing. So that would be the circumstance where you want to have something that's going to keep them calm and keep you calm, but be able to monitor what's going on.
And I think that's the biggest thing, Nicole, in technology, is when it creates a convenience, that's when we want to embrace it. You know, a reliable convenience. And, you know, even sometimes if it's not totally reliable, but it's super convenient, it's worth adapting because it just, it can change the way that you do things. And, you know, who wants to sedate all of those animals just to do those basic things? It just,
well, that's right. That's a risk too. That's like, that's its own, that's the thing, is you always have to weigh that option. Like whenever you have something that you can't touch, you're like, okay, well, how much are we going to do here? Like, you know, where you do no harm. That's like your, that's the end all be all, right? Is like, we do no harm here. So how can we make this work for both us and vicious Fluffy? Who wants nothing to do with us.
And, absolutely.
And yet be able to treat it. But yeah, that was what I had not thought about that. I listened, you know, what's interesting is I listened to that episode twice, the one where with Scott's technology. And the first time I listened to it, I'd only been at my job for like maybe, I want to say maybe a month. And I'm now about 3 months in. And I listened to it again, because it was on your list of stuff like, you know, like, oh, hey, these are the good ones that are going to be relevant. And I listened to it again, and I hadn't even thought about that application, that I was like, oh man, this is my life now, where I almost every animal that's in my life doesn't want me touching it. So now it's a different ball game. Versus, it's always amazed me in veterinary medicine how much you can do with dogs and cats, like how much we're able to accomplish relatively easily. And then you get into a world where it's wild animals or undomesticated animals, and it's like, oh no, the norm is no touching, and it's not good for them. Like, they don't want you there. It's better for them to be completely hands off. And so then you have to think of different ways. You really have to organize yourself. You have to think of different ways to do things. When you do have to do something there, you cannot fuck up. Like, you have to have it all your ducks in a row, exactly how it has to be for that 10 minutes that you're going to have if you sedate them with something. Then what you cannot do is a pre-anesthetic exam. You can't do it. Like, you can't touch them because they don't want you touching them, so they'll stress out. And in the case of rhesus macaques who carry herpes B virus, you got double gloves, you have a face shield, you got a mask on, you got this huge gown on, so you can't even really, even in the most well-controlled circumstances, you can't really touch them. So I was like, oh, but if I pointed Scott's magic laser
at the monkey,
I get a heart rate. But if its heart rate was like, if its heart rate was all boo ba ba zap boo zap boo zap zoo boo, you'd be like, oh,
it might not be the greatest
okay.
day to sedate the monkey. You know, you might just want to pick another one.
That's right.
It's so funny, but so true. And I think that this is really where the magic of technology, like, really can set in and change the dynamic in vet med. You know, it's like, well, yeah, if we just embrace that. It's like, you know, imagine the first time they got the thermometer that you just point point and shoot, you know?
Oh, like, my God. That's and that's all we're doing now, right, is pointing and shooting people's foreheads with a thermometer. Oh. Yeah. Do they do that? Are they doing that in Nova Scotia for events and stuff?
No.
They don't even do it.
We've gone back to normal.
Oh,
like, and it's not a delusional normal. Like, there was literally 3 months where no one did anything.
That's, yes.
You know, if you traveled from one place to another, you were 14 days in your home,
right.
And that just was it. And so we went on this insane lockdown. I remember I had to drive to the city for work. And, you know, I would normally see thousands of cars
mm-hmm.
on that drive. And I saw maybe three.
Mm.
And it was like I Am Legend. It was just like this insane, you know, movie that I didn't really want to be in. I was like, okay, can we turn this off now? You know, it was like, it was so awkward. But we really locked everything down in the entire country of Canada. Everything's locked. The borders are locked. The planes, everything's done. It's closed. And, you know, it's done us really well. And I hope I'm, you know, not bragging that it's not going to go back in the opposite direction, but it's amazing here right now.
Yeah.
It feels so good to have gone, to be able to go to a restaurant and order a pizza.
Oh,
or whatever.
Man, right.
You know, or go get sushi. It's incredible. It feels so good.
You
guys will get there.
I was going to say, Canada, give us some hope. I know Canada, you guys sit real nice and quiet up there, but I feel like you know what you're doing.
We just kind of keep to ourselves, you know. The occasional podcast gets out, but that's it.
But that's all. That's all it needs to be. Now you're gonna have problems twofold. Now you're gonna have people emailing you, and you're gonna have people knocking on your door trying to get into Nova Scotia.
I stay at your house?
Yeah, exactly. They're like, it's nice up here. You're like, you know, you're gonna sit in your car for 14 days, and then we'll think about you being up here. That's what's gonna happen.
It's just such a bizarre world, and I think you're right. I think there is definitely this like, you know, shelter in place fatigue or like self-isolation fatigue, because it's just brutal.
Mm-hmm.
We're social animals. We'd like to be out of our cages.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that is a very true statement. People are ready to do that, but it's just not, you know, at this point where like in California generally, I feel like we're learning how to live with it. Because it's not going anywhere. So now it's not about shelter in place till it's over. We have to think about it that there is no over. Like until we hear otherwise, there is no over. Like now it's about figuring out how we're going to coexist with this and still be able to not lose our minds, which is what, you know, me and my wife have been doing that for a while now. We're trying to figure out how can we still have gatherings and see people. Like we can meet outdoors, we can have our picnic blankets 6 feet apart in the outdoors. Like that's how we're not going to go crazy. But I think it's the mistake is thinking that there is an end point to it. Like when we reopen everything, it's like, no, it's going to be an adjustment. There is no reopening and it's fine. Like now we're in a world of adapting.
If we could say to the people of the world, we're going to put the AI on the coronavirus issue, which, by the way, we're doing.
I was going to say, it's happening.
And it's found a solution. You know, no one's going to be like, okay, well, you know, fuck the AI. I don't believe it. You know, we don't want to hear it. We don't want their solution. We want the doctor's solution. You know, and I think the way that we need to look at technology is it coexists with us and can supplement and add value. And, you know, if some AI in the world right now is chewing away on this problem and can come up with a vaccine, atta go.
Oh, my God.
Bring it.
Right.
You know, the sooner the better.
Oh, well, and that's the thing is there is so much that has to happen. There's so much sequencing and so much testing that normally goes into vaccine creation that everyone needs it to happen tomorrow. It needed to happen yesterday, tomorrow. So the systems, if we can use the technology that we have now, like use the powers that exist now in the world to help expedite that process in a safe and scientific way, I am all for that. Like, let's use the tools. Like, that's what they're here for.
That's right.
I mean, and the humans are part of that. Like you had said, you know,
it's a symbiotic relationship. It's not them versus us. It's, you know, it's us, you know, pressing the buttons, getting the technology to chew away at some of the biggest problems that we've got. I was in Nicaragua a couple of years ago, And I was just about to board a flight that was for 12 people and in a plane that could fit 13.
Ooh.
Tiny, tiny little plane. And I saw the pilot doing manual weight and balance on paper.
Whoa.
I've never seen that before.
Whoa.
I was like, what's he doing? He's doing the math to figure out if the plane is balanced correctly.
Oh,
and I was thinking
God.
To myself, what the hell? Yeah. What if he makes a mistake? You know, and this is an example, you know, we don't even see these bits of technology in our life, but
that's
you know,
right.
that's constantly happening in the planes that we're in. So it's really interesting, you know, there's areas where we've adopted technology and we just become like so attuned to it where we don't even think about it. And then there's other areas where we just get hyper paranoid and it's just because of lack of exposure and a bit of ignorance. You know, we're all ignorant when it comes to some things, you know, there's tons of stuff that we could talk about, in the vet world that I just like look at you with like glazed over eyes and
yeah.
just shake my head and pretend, you know?
Right. Right.
So I think that we just have to be careful, you know, and then we also have to like be okay with being out of our comfort zone when it comes to technology, because it can add a lot of value.
Yep. That's right. Well, I think that's a really interesting point, that so much of it is invisible to us in our everyday. Like that when you get on a commercial airliner, that's exactly what the technology is doing, is making sure that you're all going to get from point A to point B doing 1,000 different things, but the magic is that you're never aware that it's there. And I'm so glad that you talked about your Nicaragua travels, because I had that written down. I was like, oh, this dude says he's a traveler guy. That's...
Yeah, I think it's like 64 countries now.
No.
Yeah, and I'm going to bang off a couple of this year. I might go to Ecuador in a week.
Oh, that's so yeah. Ooh, tricky. Ecuador's a tricky,
tricky
one right now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's tricky. But, you know, it's hard to say. So we don't know. Traveling anywhere in the world right now, there's kind of like this, am I going into a war zone?
I know.
You know, because there's so many places that are literally flipped upside down.
Yes.
And... Yeah, and I mean, normally that doesn't scare me. You know, I would go to Afghanistan, or I would go to, you know, some war-torn country. I wouldn't even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just kind of blend in, a bit of a high-risk traveler. But the coronavirus and the world that we live in right now is a bit out of any kind of normal.
Exactly. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. This virus is doing its thing, and nobody really knows what to expect. I mean, no one's lived through this. Like my sister-in-law's grandmother is 90, almost 95.
Oh.
And it's amazing for me. I mean, and she is one sharp lady. Like, she is 100% with it. And it's amazing to think about that this has happened in her lifetime. Like, how many things has she seen
I was over at my grandparents' house today, like I said, for the first time in a couple months.
Right.
And my grandfather's like 84.
Uh-huh.
And he's the same thing. He's sharp as shit.
Yeah.
You know, like, we just had a really nice adult conversation today, and my kids are there, and he's my grandfather, and they're playing, and we're just having this afternoon, and I really miss them. I was like, you know, I see them every couple of weeks, normally. And then, you know, 3 or 4 months at that stage of their life, you know, and his health has never been good. So I kind of like always feel like every visit is like valuable.
Yes. Yes.
And so it's just really interesting, you know, that it's such a strange time. And the same thing for them. They've seen all kinds of crazy stuff.
Right.
But I think this wins.
This wins.
This is
yeah.
The craziest.
This wins the crazy.
I hope there's nothing else that's
yeah,
this
let's,
crazy, you know?
Let's, like, right. That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, let's let
this is deep enough.
This one, we can let this one go. You give us hope if Nova Scotia
yeah,
has
I mean,
figured it
I'm
out.
Telling you, I'm telling you that the world that we're living up here is completely different, and I wish nothing but this type of life for the rest of the world. You know, I think that there's things that can be done to kind of get out in front of this, and we've got the biggest, brightest computers and the best minds in the world on this thing. So I truly believe that it will be a thing of the past. And it's just a matter of time before we chase it out of this planet.
I needed to hear that, Sean. That is a beautiful way to end this. Thank you,
yeah.
Canada.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much to Sean Wilkie. of Veterinary Innovation Podcast. Thank you for finding me on the interwebs. Give their podcast a listen. They've got some fantastic guests, and they've dedicated their giant brains to helping veterinary medicine with technology, which is awesome. Thanks so much for listening to Cat Disgusted. Now, remember, more than ever, because I work in a human hospital, don't come see me at work. Stay safe out there, everybody.
Fat Charlie the Archangel sloped into the room. He said, I have no opinion about this, and I have no opinion about that. Sad as a lonely little wrinkled balloon. He said, well, I don't claim